I want to ask if you remember this man, Admiral James Stockdale is his name. And once I watched a YouTube video about him, he was a vice presidential candidate. But this goes back, and this is what shocked me, to 1992, because I remember watching some of that debate. Al Gore and Dan Quayle were the other two vice presidential candidates, and they were much more well known. After all, Al Gore invented the internet, right? That's terrible, I'm sorry. But James Stockdale was the least well known of the three, and he began his speech saying, "Who am I and why am I here?" And watching the YouTube video, there were some chuckles there. And I don't think it was because he wasn't respected, because the more I read about him, the more I respect him. But because he was not as well known as the other two. James Stockdale is really an American hero. He passed away in 2005. But here's some more about Admiral James Stockdale. He's one of the most highly decorated officers in the history of the U.S. Navy. Jim Collins wrote a book about him called Good to Great, and he interviewed James Stockdale. And Collins wanted to focus on an experience that Admiral Stockdale had endured. And that was during the Vietnam War. He had to eject from his Skyhawk plane, and he parachuted into a small village where he was captured, beaten, and imprisoned. And over the period of 8 years, he would endure some 20 or more than 20 occasions of torture as a prisoner. So from 1965 to 1973, he survived a very harsh experience, never knowing if he'd see his loved ones again. Upon his release, of course, he became a legend in the armed forces. And I'm sure you're asking, as I wanted to know, how did you endure? How did you endure that time when you were in that horrible situation for 8 years? And listen to what he said. "I never lost faith in the end of the story. I never doubted not only that I would get out, but also that I would prevail in the end and turn the experience into the defining event in my life, which in retrospect, I would not trade." Collins then asked Stockdale, "Who didn't make it out? Of your fellow prisoners, who didn't make it out?" His answer was quick. He said, "Oh, that's easy. It was the optimists." Collins asked for more explanation there. And this is what he said. "The optimists, they're the ones who said, 'We're going to be out by Christmas.' And Christmas would come and Christmas would go. And then they'd say, 'We're going to be out by Easter.' And Easter would come and Easter would go. And then there would come Thanksgiving. Then it would be Christmas again. And they, the optimists, died of a broken heart." Admiral Stockdale then added these words, "This is a very important lesson. You must never confuse faith that you will prevail in the end, which you can never afford to lose, with the discipline to confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, whatever they might be." I want to ask you to remember that statement. You must never confuse faith that you will prevail in the end with the discipline to confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, whatever they might be. The Apostle Paul wrote these words, "We are hard pressed on every side, yet not crushed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed." One paraphrase puts it like this: "We are pressed on every side by troubles, but not crushed and broken. We are perplexed because we don't know why things happen as they do, but we don't give up and quit. We are hunted down, but God never abandons us. We get knocked down, but we get up and we keep going. And that's the attitude of a can-do survivor who refuses to give in. And we're studying the life of Joseph, and I think we see that attitude in him. Because he's been on the mountaintop experiences, he's seen firsthand the blessing of God, but he's been down in the valleys now. In fact, now he's in prison. He's in prison for a crime that he did not commit. And I think Joseph teaches us this lesson as well. That trusting God offers no guarantees that everything will proceed just as we might write the script. At times, we must accept discouragement compounded by the passing of time. We must bear the weight, which is life's heaviest burden. And you know what I'm talking about. You may be waiting right now. Waiting on something to change in your life or in the life of a loved one. Waiting on someone to obey the gospel. Waiting on a child to come back home. Waiting for the pain in your heart to subside. You know what it means to wait. So I appreciated this statement. It is life's heaviest burden. So what do we do? What do we do when the disappointment and the difficulties continue? Well, we need to continue to pray. We need to continue to trust God. But I want to remind us that we must also keep our faith in the end of the story. To me, that must have been part of Joseph's life. As he endured this roller coaster that had some very difficult times in his life, and yet we don't find him turning his back on God. Rather, we find him seeking to be faithful to God and being God's man wherever he was, whether it's in Potiphar's house as a slave or now in prison, and he's even rising to the top and being put in charge of other prisoners. He must have kept his faith in the end of the story. Maybe he's thinking back on those dreams that God had given him, where his brother sheaves would bow down to his, where the sun, moon, and stars would bow down to him. And he's thinking, God has something in store for me, and I sure don't see it right now. But the story isn't over. It must not be over. So he's keeping his faith in the end of the story. And folks, it's the difficulties that we encounter that really are the defining moments for our faith. We're either going to walk away from faith because it no longer seems real or effective, or we're going to allow these difficulties to draw us closer to God, realizing that we can't make it without Him. And we're still looking for that better end of the story. So we last saw Joseph in our study. He's thrown into prison, falsely accused of raping Potiphar's wife. Yet we also observe how Joseph's character had developed to where, even though he's in prison, and even though he didn't commit the crime, he's able to empathize with other prisoners. And I love this quality. You remember this, verses 6 and 7? Joseph came in to them in the morning. This is the butler and the baker that were imprisoned along with him. And saw that they were sad. And he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in the custody of his Lord's house, saying, "Why do you look so sad today?" And again, that just strikes me. He's in prison, mind you, and he's been there for a while, falsely accused, and yet he's given charge of these two officials in Pharaoh's government, and he sees that they're sad, and he wants to know why. He's able to empathize with them. There's three PowerPoints I want to give you. And in fact, they're on the back of Ricky's article. And the first one is this: as you wait, empathize with your fellow waiters. As you wait, and we all are waiting for one thing or another, as you wait, empathize with others who are waiting. We know that some time had gone by for Joseph. He's already present when they are put into prison. The dreams that they had come sometime later. So keep in mind, he's already seeing his life. He's living in this prison cell day in and day out. And I'm sure the clock is ticking very, very slowly for him. But he's put in charge of the butler and the baker. And I want to read and remind you, first of all, of the butler's dream. Both the butler and the baker, well, Joseph asks the men why they're so dejected. And they say, well, we have no one to interpret our dreams. We each have had a dream. There's no interpreter of it. So Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please. And I don't want you to miss that statement either, because he's the dreamer. His brothers labeled him as such. And now he's had his own dreams, but now he's told about the dreams of two other men, two fellow prisoners. And they're troubled because they can't make sense of them. And so he says, well, only God can interpret dreams. What does that tell you about Joseph's faith? Doesn't that tell us that he hasn't given up on God? Doesn't that tell us that he still is believing in him, even though he doesn't understand why certain things are happening in his life? Tell him to me. He's confident God will enable him to give the proper interpretation of those dreams. So here's the butler's dream. Read with me Genesis chapter 40, beginning with verse 9. The chief butler, or the cupbearer, told his dream to Joseph and said to him, behold, in my dream, a vine was before me. And in the vine were three branches. It was though it budded, its blossoms shot forth, and its clusters brought forth ripe grapes. Then Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. There's the dream. And Joseph, by God's power, gives the interpretation. Verse 12. This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Now within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your place, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to the former manner which you were when you were his butler. So those three branches represent 3 days. In 3 days, you're going to be restored to your former position. Good news for the butler, or the cupbearer. And Joseph only has this request. Verse 14, but remember me. But remember me when it is well with you. And please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews. And also I have done nothing here that they should put me into the dungeon. So when you're restored, butler, would you mention me to Pharaoh? Would you tell him about me? The butler, no doubt, is hearing what's going on here. And he thinks, well, I had a dream, and it turned out really good for the butler. So let me tell him my dream. So we read on. Verse 16, when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said to Joseph, I also was in my dream, and there I had three white baskets on my head. In the uppermost basket, there were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, and the birds ate them out of the basket on my head. And Joseph interprets the dream. Verse 17, let me read that. In the uppermost basket, there were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, and the birds ate them out of the basket on my head. Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation of it. The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh from you. So it was bad news for the baker. As time goes on here, we see that 3 days later, those interpretations became true. The butler was restored to his position. The baker was hanged. You remember Joseph's request of the butler? When you're restored, remember me. Did he remember him? No. One of the most heartbreaking lines, perhaps, in Scripture is in verse 23. Yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. How could he do that? How could he do that? Was he so excited that he had been restored to his position that he didn't remember? Was he scared that if he might mention Joseph, a fellow prisoner, and try to get Pharaoh to consider releasing him, that it might put him in a questionable position that might have negative consequences? Don't know. How long did the butler forget Joseph? Look at the next verse. Chapter 41, verse 1. Then it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream. He forgot him 2 years. What's Joseph doing in those 2 years? He's still in prison. He's going by day in a very slow pace. 730 days waiting. Maybe he asked what James Stockdale asked. Who am I? Why am I here? But to his credit, he kept trusting God while he waited. And waiting, it's actually one of the Bible's great themes. Abraham and Sarah had to wait 25 years for God to fulfill the promise that he'd made that they would bear a son in their old age. They waited 25 years for that. Moses had to wait 40 years in the wilderness before God showed him his great mission to deliver his people out of Egyptian bondage. 40 years. David had to run for his life, living in forests and caves, and after being anointed as the next king, he waited more than a decade before he was actually crowned king. And here Joseph is waiting 2 years. And as you know, the intensity of suffering is amplified by the time of its duration. To have to wait for a long time just compounds the struggle. But it's in that time of waiting that it can bring about positive things in our lives. Abraham, for example, who waited, was found worthy to found a nation because he knew how to wait upon the Lord. David, worthy to become the nation's greatest king because of his hard-won wisdom. Moses, worthy to lead a nation to its home because he had waited and matured. But how do you endure the times of waiting? Here's PowerPoint number 2. You do it by leaning on the Lord for strength. Leaning on the Lord for strength. The Apostle Paul did some waiting himself on many occasions. He writes in 2 Corinthians chapter 12 about his thorn in the flesh. He says that, "And lest I be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord 3 times that it might depart from me." We don't know exactly what that was, but we know that it was troubling Paul. He prayed and prayed and prayed that God would release him, take that thorn in the flesh away. Instead, here was the Lord's answer. "My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness." Here's Paul's response. "Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities and reproaches and needs and persecutions and distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong." If your power is going to be with me while I go with suffering, then I want to suffer. That's almost like what Paul is saying, isn't it? I want to know that I'm weak so that I can know the strength that you provide. He was dependent, completely dependent upon that strength that only God could provide to help him endure. And I think we see the same things in Joseph's life. And when you and I are wrestling with some unwelcome factor in our lives and God doesn't remove it, let's lean on him for strength, as Paul and as Joseph did. And I heard one of our sweet ladies say recently, asked about a passage that meant a lot to her. She said, Isaiah 40:31. Those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Where do you think she finds the strength to endure? But again, the third PowerPoint is this: keep your faith in the end of the story. Keep your faith in the end of the story. Joseph is imprisoned for a crime he didn't commit. By God's power, he's able to interpret a dream for Pharaoh's butler and his baker. It's good news for the butler, and he only had that one request: remember me, tell Pharaoh about me. But that one request was denied for 2 years. But remember this, Joseph's story isn't over. We know that because we know the rest of the story. He doesn't know it. But I believe he's hoping and he's looking and he's trusting that it's not the end of his story. I read about two men who were both experiencing probably the most difficult trial that life can bring. They both had a child that was in very poor health. These fathers prayed hard, asking God to spare their children. Tragically, neither adult child survived. How did those two fathers respond? In one case, the father told his preacher, "My heart is broken. This is the deepest pain I've ever encountered, and I know there's a hole in my heart that won't be healed in this life. You never get over something like this. But I have no issues with God. I've told him that I don't have to understand his ways to accept them, and he knows that I can live with the hope of seeing my child again. Someday in heaven, that hope is very special to me." The other father couldn't accept what had happened. When he saw his prayers go unanswered, he walked away from his faith, disassociated himself from his church. What's the difference? One kept his faith in the end of the story. It reminded me of a story that I heard many years ago. And as I Googled it, I came across names attached to this story. Henry Morrison served as a missionary in Africa for over 40 years. And he and his wife were on the way back from serving that time as missionaries. Little did they know that on this same ship upon which they were passengers was also Teddy Roosevelt, who had been to Africa on one of his hunting trips. The ship pulled into New York Harbor, and Morrison looked to see if anyone had come to welcome him and his wife back. And to his amazement and delight, he saw thousands of people, and the bands were playing, and there were signs, big signs, that had the words, "Welcome home." So he was so excited as he and his wife finally disembarked off the ship, only to find that the crowds were gone. You see, the crowds had come to welcome Teddy Roosevelt back home, not the Morrison family. They went to the hotel, and Henry Morrison had a heavy heart, and he said, "Honey, I just don't get it. For 40 years, we poured our lives into ministry and service, and yet we came back to America, and not a single soul came to welcome us home." His wife came and sat down next to her husband. She put her hand on his shoulder and comforted him with these words: "Henry, you've forgotten something. You're not home yet. You're not home yet. I don't know what you're going through today, but may I remind you, you're not home yet. That's the end of the story. That's the end of the story. The trial that you're going through right now or will go through is not the end of the story. The end of the story is because of Jesus, there's an eternal home. And our citizenship, if you're a child of God, Paul says our citizenship is in heaven. That's what we're looking forward to. Because that's the end of the story that goes on and on and on. So as Stockdale put it, don't lose faith in the end of the story, because this is the greatest story ever told. You won't walk through this valley forever. So keep trusting God like Joseph did. Know that He loves you no matter what the skies look like. Keep walking. Keep serving. Keep trusting. And keep realizing that the story isn't over. And that God loves you no matter what, because He's proven it by giving His Son to die for you. So that through Him, you can have forgiveness of sins. You can be united with Him. You can be a part of His family and look forward to an eternal home. If you're ready to accept that offer on His terms, as a penitent believer ready to be baptized into Christ, we hope and pray that you'll do that. If you need the prayers of the church on your behalf, won't you let that be known? And won't you come right now as we stand and sing?